Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. Usually we start this by talking about it being a crazy week in politics, but this week was just a crazy week, period. It was a historic week that we'll never forget living through. The week where California essentially shut down, where the governor said everybody stay inside, and this whole thing, which could last for a month or a couple months, of the coronavirus will reshape our society, and we're sort of watching it happen and trying to figure out how to cope with it. And I hope this week's episode makes you feel a little bit better. This isn't political bickering. This isn't sort of the sport of all that. This is smart conversations with people that are leaders in their field. We break it down this week. We talk about the medical realities with Paul Song, who is an oncologist, but also a healthcare policy advisor who works at the highest levels in California on the issue of healthcare. We talk with Harvey Levin of TMZ about California's most prominent industry, the entertainment industry, and how this impacts that, and also some of the politics of this. And then finally, we talked with Dr. Michael Gervais, who is a high-performance psychologist, works with top athletes, top CEOs, has this great podcast called Finding Mastery, and he helps us sort of cope with some of this from a psychological perspective. Let's begin with Dr. Song and the medical realities.
Welcome to The Issue Is for the first time. Grateful to have you.
Thanks for having me.
So let's begin with this. There is a lot of concern right now after this stay-at-home order, and there are people right now who are really hurting, who are wondering, why is all of this necessary? Do we really need to go this far? What do you say to them?
Well, the sad part about this disease is that it has a very, very high infectious rate. So if you look at people who are infected, 4 out of 5 people are infected by people who don't exhibit any symptoms. So unless we start to really limit the contact that each and every one of us has, we're not going to get a handle on the infection rate in general, and people are going to continue to congregate in society and infect people unknowingly. That is the real concern, and that is the real problem that could potentially overwhelm our entire medical system.
So we're looking for some hope. There is a new study that showed some early evidence that may possibly work. We got to say that this is early, but we want to put some information up on the screen. It's this combination of an anti-malarial drug and a Z-Pak. And in France, they found that this actually cured patients with coronavirus. What do you think of this, and what should people know about this, Dr. Song?
Well, one, the data is very preliminary, and it only had 40 total patients. But what we can see so far, and why the authors decided to publish this online so quickly, was that in the group that got both the hydroxychloroquine as well as the Zithromax, which is otherwise commonly known as a Z-Pak, they had complete elimination of viral load. And this was measured by polymerase chain reaction within 6 days. And why that's so potentially game-changing is that, as I mentioned, a lot of people are walking around shedding viruses unknowingly. And if you can eliminate this from the body in such a short period of time, then the potential to infect others is greatly diminished, not to mention the recovery period for patients. So while the data is very preliminary, it is extremely, extremely compelling and also very helpful.
One of the things that you do, in addition to being a top oncologist, is you really study healthcare policy. You've talked with several California governors on this issue. What do you think this situation is showing us about what works about our healthcare system and maybe what doesn't work about our healthcare system?
Well, sadly, I think it's going to expose sort of the inequality that exists in our healthcare system. So prior to the most recent executive orders and bills that were passed by Congress, if people wanted to go get testing, assuming that there were enough tests, a lot of people would be saddled with co-pays and deductibles. And most people don't have $250 sitting around in their pocket and would rather delay seeking the treatment or care. So when you look at that, the number of people that perhaps started to exhibit symptoms who did not want to go get testing simply because of cost, that number is quite staggering, and those people continue to infect people in their communities. The other part is, and hopefully we don't get to this point where our healthcare system is stretched, is we don't have the number of ventilators, ICU beds, and things that we need. But again, a recent study just came out today that they think that the average cost for the average American who gets infected for this can be anywhere from $10,000 to $20,000. And if you require a hospital admission and ICU admission, you're looking over $100,000 potentially for a cost for the patient. And for patients who have high deductible plans that require that they come up with the first $6,000 to $7,000 first out of pocket, this is enough to cause bankruptcy in a lot of people. And what I'm really, again, worried about is it's going to delay people seeking care simply because they can't afford it.
What about people that don't have insurance to begin with?
Well, in our state of California, one out of three people is covered through Medicaid, which is the state safety net healthcare system. And this is something, again, prior to this coronavirus scare, because reimbursements were quite low for providers, it was hard for people with this Medicaid coverage to even find a doctor to see, let alone get care. You now have all these people who have lost their jobs and as a result are transitioning from an employer-sponsored health plan to Medicaid. This is going to further overwhelm our system. And again, if people do not get care and testing in a timely fashion, this is only going to cause the virus to spread even more and more, and also the mortality rate to increase. So that is a real problem that is going to expose sort of the shortcomings of our healthcare system, sadly.
You've studied closely what's happened in Italy in terms of what really isn't working and what's happened in South Korea, which in large part is working. What's the difference and what can we learn about that for our system here in California and in America?
Well, the most telling thing about what South Korea did was it learned from its own mistakes. So in 2015, when the Middle Eastern Respiratory Syndrome or MERS healthcare infection spread, South Korea was the largest population of people that were infected and died outside of the Middle East. And it was a big cause of embarrassment as well as shame for the country that they were not prepared. So in 2015, they really decided to set up a pandemic-specific task force to make sure that if this happened in the future, they were better prepared. And that certainly came into fruition with this coronavirus. It should be pointed out in January, around the time that we were seeing the first cases here in the United States, Korea only had four cases at that point, but they convened an emergency meeting where they immediately set aside the private sector with a task to go find diagnostics. And within 1 week of that call, they approved the first diagnostic kit and immediately started to set up remote testing sites. And they were able to really diagnose disease much, much earlier. So then you take a country like Italy, or in some, even the United States, they delayed implementing testing. They delayed trying to get a handle on this because I think there was some feeling that this was primarily a disease that was affecting Asian countries. So by the time they finally got around to testing people, it was really too late. And you had this real high infection rate spreading the disease amongst communities. And in the case of Italy, you had a disproportionate number of seniors that were infected. And that's what you're seeing right now, is that they have not been able to stem the spread of this disease. And you see the infection rate and mortality rate just continuing to climb. Whereas in countries like Korea and also China that took more aggressive measures, they have seen the number of infections really plummet. And that's when you hear officials right now in the United States saying we need to bend the curve. That's what they mean. We need to bring the infection rate down dramatically in order not to overwhelm our system.
You talked about some of the prejudice against Asian Americans. As one of the country's top Asian American doctors, when you hear the president talk about a term like Chinese flu or Kung flu from the White House, what goes through your mind?
Well, it's really unfortunate, and I'm of Korean descent, but still I find his term of calling this the China virus very off-putting, not just to Chinese, but all Asian Americans, because one, the amount of racism that is being stoked about that towards not just Chinese, but all Asian Americans, because to some people we still all just look alike, is no small amount, and there's a lot of hate crimes that are already being perpetrated in the United States. But more importantly, if you now look at the number of people who have succumbed to this, more people have died of coronavirus in Italy than they have now in China. So I think to label it as one entity, really to just assign a boogeyman, is not helping at a time of a mass, problems for the whole world. We should be coming together. You have countries such as Korea, China, and Japan, their health ministries are coming together to figure out what they did right, what didn't work right. And I think that the big problem is that this is something that we need to do. We need to be working together with our scientists in Asia rather than demonizing one another.
And lastly, you're not only a doctor, but you're also a father and you're a husband and you've got gorgeous kids. What's this like for you as a parent going through this? And what do you say to your kids?
Well, first and foremost, I think that it's been, a little bit of a trying time. You can definitely understand people having a much higher appreciation of teachers than they did prior to this, particularly since all of our kids are now being homeschooled. But I will say if there's one positive through all of this, it's the ability for us to be present with one another, to be connected in a way that I think many of us have lost touch through the daily stress. So my wife, as you pointed out, she's a TV journalist and she's on the road a lot. Her production has been shut down, and this is the most she's been at home for a long period of time. And it's really been an amazing opportunity for us to connect with one another, to really show each other how much we love one another, and to really also be more actively involved in our kids' education, because many times we have to sit down with our kids during their lessons online and help them through this. So if there's any positive that's come through this, I think we as a society, it's caused us to sort of recalibrate our herky-jerky rush nature and spend more time with the people that we love to really be more present. And also, if you look, if you've been outside recently, I've never seen the sky so clear in Los Angeles in all the years that I've lived here. So it's also giving Mother Nature a chance to kind of heal the earth. So it's been a wonderful time.
And no traffic.
And no traffic.
We like to play music on this show. There are so many Hollywood films whose release dates are being delayed because of this. Among them, the newest James Bond film with a fitting title, No Time to Die. Up next, we're talking more about the entertainment industry with Harvey Levin of TMZ. Stay with us. More of The Issue Is right after this. One of California's top industries is, of course, film. And all film production has essentially shut down. All movie theaters, concerts, Broadway-style shows, all on hold indefinitely. Many top films not being released. Late-night shows. The hosts are working from home. There are no audiences as they produce their content from their cell phones. This is a landmark moment for streaming sites like Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, and Disney Plus, who have a large catalog of previously shot content. European officials asking Netflix to slow down its traffic because so many people are trying to log on. Here to talk about all of that is Harvey Levin, the founder of TMZ. Harvey is joining us via Zoom for the first time. We're seeing you at TMZ. It's nice to see your office. Nice digs.
I'm at home. So, it's funny, Alex. We, as you know, the governor has exempted news operations, saying, they are an essential service. And we made some decisions late last night that we just said, look, we could bring everybody into the office, but it's just, we don't want to do that. And, people are worried and upset. So we're doing all of our television shows. We're doing our website. We're doing everything remotely. And based on what you said in your intro, I am already discovering things that may alter when this is all over.
Yeah, let's talk about this, because you've covered a lot of different things and a lot of different era in terms of media. Talk about the unprecedented nature of this moment.
Well, it's not just media, Alex. I've been around for a long time, And I've never seen anything like this in my life. And I was talking to somebody a half hour ago who is a very big force in the entertainment world. And he was saying the same thing. And he said that, look, they are pivoting. They are changing. They are, you know, adjusting to what we don't know what the end game will be. But ultimately, we're actually all learning things that I think we might be able to apply when this is all over.
Like what?
Well, you know, we have done things, TMZ, I mean, I don't want to say traditionally, but look, we have an office and we have a lot of people in the office. And we, you know, we have a New York office and we have people in DC. But what we're finding is that some of the ability to do this where people can be remote, and we're finding that there have been certain advantages just in terms of the content that we're producing for various reasons. So I'm not saying this is going to be a fundamental change, but I think we're all learning things about, you know, done beats perfect. I mean, I think in many ways that is something we're taking away from this. You find ways of getting things done that were way more difficult now than they were before, but you figure it out.
Oftentimes, celebrities can become the face of something. And the first real celebrity that became the face of this was one of the best known, most beloved celebrities of all, Tom Hanks. Do you think him getting this was sort of a game changing moment in the way that average people perceived this?
I think Tom Hanks made a difference. What you're saying, I've heard from a lot of people. Honestly, I don't quite agree with it. I think that it was stunning that Tom Hanks got it, but I think the one person who has really gotten the attention of everybody is Anthony Fauci. And, you know, Alex, I don't know if I'm going to be able to adequately explain the analogy that I see, but to me, Anthony Fauci is the scientific version of Bill Maher, that he doesn't take one side, another side. He's not there to criticize one side or another. He'll, you know, if there's criticism to go around on both sides, he'll say it. If something is wrong on one side, he'll say it. I think Anthony Fauci has had an enormous impact in terms of connecting to the public.
Do you think Bill Maher doesn't take one side?
Oh, I think Bill Maher, what I love about Bill Maher, look, he is a liberal Democrat, but he also has issues with Democrats too. And he's not afraid to speak his mind, even though it's not politically correct necessarily. He will go after both sides if he feels they're wrong. And that's why I think Bill Maher is special. And I think Fauci's doing the same thing. And remember, he's doing it in front of President Trump, who, you know, has almost, it seems like, required a pledge of loyalty that everybody who speaks, with the exception of Fauci and maybe one or two others, they start by talking about how great they think Trump has done in this thing. Fauci hasn't done that.
Let's talk a little bit more about President Trump's response to this. One of the stories that's come out is that the Lakers, several of their players tested positive, some of the Nets tested positive, even though they were asymptomatic. And right now, for most average people, if you don't have symptoms, you can't take a test. The president was asked about that this week. Let's play that and get you to respond.
How are non-symptomatic professional athletes getting tests while others are waiting in line and can't get them? Do the well-connected go to the front of the line?
Well, you'd have to ask them that question. I mean, I've read. No, I wouldn't say so, but perhaps that's been the story of life. That does happen on occasion.
What do you make of that moment and sort of the president's nature as what should be comforter-in-chief?
Well, okay, those are two different things. On the first thing, what do I make of what he said? The last thing he said is really interesting, which is that is the way it's been for a long time. I don't think there's much question, Alex, that there was some special treatment for these basketball players and maybe for others as well who are asymptomatic and somehow got tests. But look, when, you know, I think that for many, many decades, famous people have advantages when they deal with medical professionals, when they deal with lots of people. And I think what Trump was saying at the end, which is that's the way it's worked for a long time, That's actually a true statement. And I think that does explain that connections still matter, even in a pandemic. Now, as for how President Trump is doing, Alex, I don't know what you've been thinking about in the last 12 hours, but what I've been thinking about is that Gavin Newsom basically said everybody stay at home except essential people. New York then followed suit. And when you really look at it, there's no dividing line where certain people, like people in New York, are more prone to get it than people in Montana. People are people, and there are no borders. And it seems to me that if this is a prudent move, and I think it is, then the federal government should implement it nationwide, because how do you have essentially a quarantine in California when right on the Nevada line, they don't? So it doesn't make sense to me not to nationalize something like this at this point when it's been declared a pandemic.
You know, leaders are often made from crises. We have these huge ratings right now for these press briefings that are happening every day. People are seeing leaders in a different way. What do you make of sort of the stars that are now emerging from this?
I think that if things got reset and people could now start over and make a decision on who they'd want as the Democratic nominee, and this is no shade on Joe Biden, but you know who I think they'd pick? I think you know who I think.
Andrew Cuomo.
Yeah, I really do. I think he's become a huge star in this, and in many ways has become the national leader in this. And I think he's a big guy because he's governor of New York, but I think he's become a national superstar.
Let's talk one more moment about the entertainment industry itself. We were already seeing a big moment for streaming giants like Netflix that were kind of changing the way we see movies. Now we see movie theaters literally closed. What do you think is the long-term impact of this moment, not only in right now, but once things hopefully get back to normal, will they ever quite be the same normal for entertainment?
No, I don't think so, and I'll tell you why. I mean, I think entertainment was on the precipice of changing anyway, because when, you know, I felt this way for 10 years, that when you have the ability to take a monitor and put digital and broadcast and cable on that monitor, and you can shuttle back and forth, then it's all the same thing. And it seems to me that, you know, over time, I believe TV is going to go away and the internet's going to go away, and it's all going to become one new thing where you can take assets from both and put it on one gigantic menu. So there's already a gigantic menu on streaming services like Netflix and whatnot. So when this thing is over, it seems to me that's just going to accelerate the process. That, you know, you look at big studios right now, and they got to be struggling other than to get new product on these streaming services. But my God, I mean, you know, think about it, Alex. When this is over, are advertisers going to have the money to advertise, you know, with what's going on? And how are they going to support all of the entertainment companies that have been supported by them up to this point? We're going to have to find new revenue streams. Mm-hmm. We're going to have to reinvigorate old revenue streams. But this is not just about the cool new show you're going to see on a screen. It's about everything that's behind it to get those things on the screen. All of that is going to change.
Yeah, we've seen for those of us that are in the TV news business, our ratings are actually way up right now, but we could end up losing a lot of money because we can't get the advertisers to buy ads if they end up losing money. You're also a lawyer. We know that every time at the end of TMZ we hear, I'm a lawyer. Let's get your perspective on sort of the legality of what these governors are doing. This idea of a stay-at-home order, is that legal?
Yeah. I mean, look, when you talk about levels of national emergencies, when the World Health Organization has declared this a pandemic, when you see the number of people dying and you see that the only efficacious way of getting this under control is to get people inside and not interact, I absolutely don't see any court overturning anything like this. I think the interesting thing is going to be, What do they do with people who violate this order? They've made it clear their intention is not to arrest. I think they'd have the ability to if there are really difficult circumstances where people won't obey. But that's clearly not the intention here. I can tell you this. I am positive, based on the people I've talked to, that none of these governors or anybody else wants to make this look like martial law. And I think that's a really important point, that the police are going to be, they're going to act very gingerly in making sure that people who aren't where they should be or crowds develop where they shouldn't, that they're going to try and de-escalate the situation, but they don't want to make this look like martial law. That would be a really bad and scary thing for the country.
I'm hearing the same thing from all the leaders that I talked to about this. Dr. Gervais, welcome to The Issue Is for the first time. Great to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
And hopefully one day you won't be so far away. But I think we all are adjusting to this new reality. I think so many people in this country are feeling anxious. They're fearing fear. They're fearing confused. Help us make feel a little bit better. I mean, what are some of the tips you've learned on how to deal with those emotions and that anxiety?
We're in an unprecedented time right now. And we are feeling the effects of chronic stress. And there are no tips or tricks or shortcuts to dealing with stress, but there are time-tested and research-based and evidence-based strategies to be able to down-regulate, to manage the stress that we're feeling. So I'd like to talk about a couple tools, if that's okay.
Go ahead. What are they?
Okay. So the first is there's two fronts to being able to work with this stress. The first is awareness. And without awareness, we really don't know what tool to use. So awareness of what? Awareness of the way our body feels. And under stress, there's a very predictable thing that takes place that we all know what it feels like. There's a constriction somewhere in our body. There's a tightness in our breathing. There's a tightness in our chest or neck or jaw. And so if we can feel our body and where we feel the stress, then the response is deep breathing. And as mechanical as that sounds, as simple as that sounds, a long exhale sends a very strong signal to the brain, a very ancient part of the human experience is our brain, to calm down, to relax, we're safe. And what happens under chronic stress is that we're worrying about later, and we're trying to solve for later, the what ifs that are coming down the line, and how one might adjust to the unprecedented uncertainty that we're in. So when our mind goes way out to try to solve, then sometimes what we need to do is just say, wait a minute, hold on, come back. This is with great awareness. Come back to what can I do today? And if that feels too big, what can I do this hour? And if that feels too big, what can I do this moment to adjust? And sometimes it's a breath and sometimes or many breaths. And sometimes it's simple as changing the thought pattern.
You know, there a lot of times when you have crises, we're told to come together. This is one crisis where we're actually being told to come apart and to be separate in your homes, which is unusual for people. Human beings like to be connected to one another. There are a lot of people that are feeling bored, that are feeling lonely, that are feeling uncomfortable being at home right now. What's your advice to them?
There's two things that are taking place. One is, there's the normal kind of internal scratchiness that comes with doing something new that's a bit unsettling. And then there's a second, more serious thing that's taking place is for some people, their underlying mental health, this is exasperating it. And it's amplifying the sense of loneliness or isolation, depression, or real anxiety. And so for folks that are struggling in one frame or the other, one of the great reminders is that this war is fought on two fronts. One is on the front line with keeping your hands clean and keeping distance. And the second is it's fought internally. And it's a function of our immune system. And immunity and social belonging are tightly linked. And so being with other people helps our immune system, but we don't get access to that right now. So we need to use our technology to be able to make sure that we are staying in touch with people that we love and we care, check in on them, offer them words of encouragement, say the things that you normally haven't said to them because of the pace and the rhythm of modern life. And so what I'm doing is I'm just taking a moment and I'm writing down the things that I want to say to people and I'm calling them. I'm just checking off the list. I'm texting them and just watering the relationship in a new way, in a different way.
A lot of what people look forward to in life has been taken away.
We're talking about like weddings, movies, sporting events, a lot of the great joys in life. And people now have sort of an indefinite calendar of nothing. How do we adjust to that?
This is going to be challenging. And so there's a moment for us to say, okay, what's really important in my life? And the two most precious commodities we have, they're not commodities, but the two most precious experiences are time and relationships. And while we are being stripped of traditional coping mechanisms, like going to movies and going to sport events, or even watching sports right now, is the opportunities to come back and say, okay, who am I? And reinvest in the people that you're with. Who are they? And deepen the relationships. And I'll tell you that that challenge is real and it's hard. And it requires vulnerability, it requires intimacy. And when you lock in on those two, it's also risky. And when our brains and our bodies are in moments of risk, we light up. Our brain loves novelty and newness. And so there is some stimulation that's right around the corner if you take that next step to get to know yourself and your people a little bit better.
Yeah, I guess one of the challenges would be if you find out who am I and then you don't like that person, but that's a whole other segment, I guess. Let's talk for a moment also about schools and kids. We've got this new family dynamic where kids are home all day. Parents are now with their kids all day. That would create anxiety anyways. What's your advice to parents? What's your advice to kids in this new world?
Well, I think that each family is uniquely on their own journey, and we all have different resources, both internal and external. And this new adjustment period is going to cause high stress for some, and for some, they're going to take it in stride. One way to take it more in stride is to talk about the conditions that you're under. And here's a great, very applied thing that we can all do is create a scale. And that scale is, let's say, 1 to 100. And 100 is I have 100% resources to be here in this challenge. And let's say a 50 is like, hey, I didn't get a good night's sleep. I'm really cranky. I'm struggling. And let's say if you're, and everyone has their own scale, and every morning you wake up and you say, what number are you at? And that just helps to calibrate where people are. And with that very simple practical tool, you can say, okay, if I'm at a 75 and my partner or my child is at a 30 or something less than 75, then okay, I know I got to pick up some pieces here and vice versa. And so it's a nice little calibration tool, both to take an internal inventory and then take the inventory of the resources of the people in your family.
One thing that everybody that's been on this show today has talked about is how this will change us going forward. What do you think are sort of the long-term repercussions of this moment? And maybe is there some silver lining?
Well, one is I think we're realizing that prior to this moment, the level of stress that we live with is high. And people are walking around with full cups. Their cup is full. And if the liquid in the cup is stressed, their chronic stress was already high. Now with this new change, the cup is spilling over. So I think this is a moment of time to say, how are we going to be able to manage chronic stress? It's not complicated. It is investment in recovery. And on the world stage of athletics, everybody's working hard. Everyone is running towards stress to get better. And they're spending deep time, committed time to recover. And there's five basic pillars of recovery: sleep well, eat and hydrate well, move well, think well, which is about optimism, and then laugh well. And that's the social component. With those five, we have the mechanisms to manage stress. And so right now is a moment in time to say, let me connect to people and let me empty my cup so I can be more available during high stress moments for other people.
Well, Dr. Michael Gervais, my cup is empty. I cheers to you with my empty cup. I am taking a deep breath. I actually do feel better about that. And I do feel better after talking with you. I think this is probably the most important conversation we've had all week. Thank you so much for all that you do. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And again, that is Compete to Create, where you can find out more of the tips. You can also download the Finding Mastery podcast and find out more from him as well. Up next, we're talking more about this quarantine. Everybody is quarantining in a slightly different way, but nobody quite like Arnold Schwarzenegger.
And I just, you know, keep staying at home, away from the crowds and away from outside. The reason why I'm saying that is because
California's former governor giving us a reason to smile on a tough week. More from him when we come back. Everyone's coping with the coronavirus crisis in a different way. Californians over 65 are being asked to stay home, and former Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger checking in every day from his quarantine via social media.
And I just, you know, keep staying at home, away from the crowds and away from outside. The reason why I'm saying that is because I still see photographs and videos of people sitting in outside cafes all over the world.
Isn't that totally the dog you would picture Arnold Schwarzenegger having? Arnold's hanging out with his little dog, plus his miniature horse, his donkey. Quarantine seems more fun at his house than everybody else's. Thanks for giving us a reason to smile, Governor, in a tough week. We will get through all of this together. I hope you feel a little bit better after hearing from these three gentlemen. I certainly do. This is going to be a long ride. I want to let you know, every night, I am doing a special show with Dr. Drew every weeknight at 7 o'clock Pacific time. You can watch it on TV on Channel 11 in Los Angeles. And if you're not in Los Angeles, you can watch it live on Facebook on the Fox 11 Los Angeles Facebook page. And I also put it up on my Facebook page, and Dr. Drew puts it up on his. And you can ask us questions live in real time about coronavirus. The whole point of that show is to get rid of some of the fear and to try to really deal in facts. Thank you for listening. Stay safe, stay healthy, and as Dr. Gervais said, let's take a deep breath.